there is at any given time a small number of incredibly talented individuals that have an exceptionally high ability to produce groundbreaking ideas. And if the opportunities available to these individuals are limited, or they don't have access to institutions that would nurture their talent, then the whole world is operating at significantly below its innovation capacity. This is Ruchir Agarwal. I am an economist at the IMF, and I work in the Asia Pacific department, but my research focuses a lot on where good ideas come from, what are the drivers of innovation.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. There are talented people everywhere with ideas that could make the world a better place to live in. But what does it take for a promising young innovator to reach their full potential? Economist Ruchir Agarwal says global scientific output could be more than 40% higher if talented people around the world had equal opportunities to nurture their abilities. Agarwal and co-authors Ina Ganguly and Patrick Golay have published an article in the March issue of Finance and Development magazine titled Embracing the Gift of Global Talent. So the stereotype of migrants, especially from low-income countries, is one of the low-skilled worker. And so what made you start looking at how immigration policies might have an impact on science and innovation, and why was this important to you?
Yeah, so, you know, the work I'm going to be talking to you about today is with my colleagues, Patrick Golay, Ina Ganguly, and Jeff Smith. And we've been working for over a decade to understand where good ideas are coming from. What can policymakers do to advance the global knowledge frontier? And a big slice of this question has to do with what is the role of talent in knowledge production? And we met about 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago in Boston. And as you know, Boston is a very special place. It's a hub for innovation and science. And yes, indeed, they have immigrants that are involved in various aspects of daily life. As you say, the low-skill immigrants are definitely present in Boston, but there are also a lot of high-skill immigrants. So no matter which aspect of life we looked at, science or industry, we met, became friends with, and learned from incredible talent, many of which were often born overseas. So this kind of gave us a very intuitive and very personal understanding of why talent matters and why often foreign talent matters for science. Now, there's a lot of discussion of why the US, for example, needs to attract better foreign talent to retain US's standing in the world, a leadership role. And so a lot of people have studied that question, why high-skilled immigration matters for competitiveness. Yeah. What really motivated us here was this kind of immigration should also matter for the global advancement of science. So it's not just that people come to the US and they help the American industry, American science advance, but a lot of the ideas that get produced here then are quote-unquote exported to the rest of the world. And so we've been interested in understanding then how does foreign skilled immigration to countries like the US matter for the global advancement of science. And, you know, what's special about talent is there is an inherent geographic mismatch. Talent can be born anywhere, but there are very few places that specialize in nurturing talent. So a big part of how ideas are produced is making sure there's bridges available for these talent that are born often in developing countries to these places that specialize in nurturing them. So that's kind of the motivation behind how we got interested in this and why we think actually this matters for the future prosperity of the world.
So finding data for this type of research is always challenging. Tell me about the data that you used for this study.
Right. So you can call our approach, something like a big data meets small data.
Okay.
So, you know, of course, one of the incredible gifts for researchers in recent years has been availability of very large data sets that allows you to observe what's happening around the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we do in this project is we use the International Math Olympiad as a laboratory to understand the role of talent in knowledge production. And why we do that is, what's special about that particular setup is it is a worldwide competition for very smart high school kids. And so we can observe a pool of talent at a very young age, and we can ask which kids among these later on end up doing groundbreaking work in math or sometimes even outside math. And we follow about 4,000 individuals who participated in this competition between 1980 and 2000, those years, and we trace them based on public records, their publication records, their career trajectories, to build together a picture of what happened to these individuals later on in life. So, but when I say big data meets small data, is we combine data, for example, for every individual, we know how many publications they've had, how many people have cited their work, whether they've won awards or not. But then we trace each individual based on public records to figure out when did they move, which universities did they study at, where are they employed today. And so what we find is, if you do very well in these competitions at a young age, later on in life, you have a much, much higher chance of producing groundbreaking ideas, but the location of where you're born ends up mattering a lot. So compared to a kid born in a rich country who gets a gold medal in this competition, someone born in a relatively poor country often does significantly worse in the total number of ideas or knowledge they produce later on in life. Yeah. So what we find is, for the same two people who got the same score in these high school competitions at the International Math Olympiad, someone who migrates to the US is often about 6 times more productive in terms of idea creation within mathematics.
Wow. So how do you explain that? I mean, is it simply about better schools?
I would say part of it is the schooling, and part of it is that even within within careers, people who choose careers or who end up going to pretty good schools in domestic countries, there still ends up being sizable differences in the productivity. And I think part of it has to do with their ability to interact with other smart people or other smart kids from around the world. So schooling is a part of the story, but also peer effects, the environment, the rewards for doing good science, all of these other factors end up mattering a lot.
Hmm. But doesn't this migration of talent, as you're describing, from low-income countries perpetuate a brain drain for those countries? I mean, what happens to the exceptionally talented mathematician, for example, in a low-income country who chooses to stay home? Wouldn't that country benefit from that?
Yeah, I mean, that is a very important question, because what does it mean for the source countries where talent are leaving? You know, there are always two sides to the story.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of work that have emphasized the role impact of brain drain. One of the special things that we are finding in our work is that the benefit of this migration can accrue not just to the destination country, but to the whole world. So what I would say is that many times the individuals who stay or remain in the home countries end up not even choosing careers that are in the domain of knowledge production. So we find significantly less likelihood of individuals choosing careers in math or even outside math in academia. And we also find significantly less likelihood of individuals who don't end up migrating to engage in careers in information technology or finance. So very often these individuals cannot be even found.
And probably for the reason that you mentioned earlier, that these countries don't necessarily nurture the talent that they have in the country.
That's actually an important point. There may be not enough good institutions yet to nurture those talent. So the opportunities may be just limited, just because the quality of institutions have not yet you know, a relatively low-income country just has not time yet to develop world-class institutions. That may very well happen in the future, but it's not happening now. One thing I just would like to add, which is an important point here, is this whole discussion of brain drain is from the perspective of the country and not the individual, right? What we find, we conducted a survey of the Olympiads, math Olympiads from recent years, and we asked them, what is their dream school? What would be their dream undergraduate institution be once they graduated from high school?
Mm-hmm.
And what we find was about 2 out of 3 coming from developing countries dreamt of studying in the US, right? So part of making more immigration available is also to make sure that the individual preferences for these talented individuals are met. In practice, we found only 1 in 4 actually ended up getting the opportunity to study in the US. So there's a big gap between the dream for these individuals and what happens in practice.
Wow. So what are the major barriers now for these talented people to immigrate to say, the US or the UK? And how has it changed, or has it been changing over the past decade or so?
Yeah, that's a critical question. And what we find based on a survey is that financing costs is the main barrier.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons why many individuals don't end up either applying to institutions that are their dream schools, or even once they apply, not end up studying there.
Yeah.
The number one reason is money. So not having the ability to finance their undergraduate education. So that is a big barrier, especially for those coming from lower income countries. This is much more, what a very striking result here was immigration climate was not seen as a big barrier for individuals to study abroad. So even though, you know, in recent years there's been a rise of nationalism or nationalistic rhetoric,
yeah,
and there have been some introduction of some immigration barriers, that has not really been a big deterrent. People, actually more and more people dream of studying in the US in recent years than maybe 10 years ago. But the big deterrent really is the financing cost.
And so have you found that policymakers are essentially aware of the potential benefits of easing constraints on immigration or facilitating at least people to pursue their studies in their countries?
Yeah, I mean, there is a broad understanding of why more immigration of foreign talent will help a given country to maintain their competitiveness in the world. And of course, this is a subject of intense debate because it goes right at the heart of preferences of individuals and the electorate in different countries on how much immigration they want. But still, if you look at the immigration policies of most countries, they do tend to favor talent-based immigration. However, one thing that we do find there is less of an appreciation for, and we hope our work tries to bring attention to this, is more immigration barriers is not just bad for the competitiveness of that given country, but can actually harm the global knowledge frontier. So how quickly new ideas come about. And that's especially because there is, at any given time, a small number of incredibly talented individuals that have an exceptionally high ability to produce groundbreaking ideas. And if the opportunities available to these individuals are limited, or they don't have access to institutions that would nurture their talent, then the whole world is operating at significantly below its innovation capacity.
Yeah, so you're talking about a global scientific output, essentially. And so do you think that the global scientific output will suffer from the added restrictions on migration that we're seeing, you know, that are imposed by the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, that of course, the pandemic has taken a great toll on so many lives. And in a way, some of the hidden costs of the pandemic will also be related to science. So our work would suggest that we may not see the impact immediately,
yeah,
because, you know, in a way, in science, networks of scientists matter, right? So we have already a lot of existing networks of scientists, and we've just managed to move, many of us have managed to move from working in the office to working remotely. But what the pandemic does affect is the formation of new networks, the opportunities available to new, fresh high school graduates to come to the US to study for the undergrad. So these impact on these cohorts will end up showing years from now, where we will probably see a lower output from these cohort of individuals just because of the more limited opportunities available to them because of the pandemic.
Rusher Agarwal, senior IMF economist in the Asia and Pacific Department, thanks so much for this.
Thank you very much.
Look for Rucheer Agarwal's article, Embracing the Gift of Global Talent, in the March 2021 edition of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND to read it online, or download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. And look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing. You can also follow us on Twitter @IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.